Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to Day of the Dad, the fortnightly podcast that delves into the do's, don'ts and don't knows of parenting. I'm Ed Wood and with me is my co-presenter Keith Stewart, author of the Richard and Judy Book Club best-selling novel A Boy Made of Blocks. Hello Keith.
Hello Ed.
Hello. And this episode we welcome as our guest Matt Coyne, author of the fabulously funny new book Dummy and the phenomenally successful blog Man vs. Baby.
Phenomenally successful.
Phenomenally. So it's a phenomenal... Hello Matt.
Hello. That makes me sound quite good actually. I like the phenomenally.
That's my pleasure. And I have to say, so this morning I told my son that I was meeting you today and I'd had the book around the house, Dummy, which is a very, very funny book about being a dad, basically, non-fiction book about what it means to be a parent. Has a lovely illustration on the cover of a man with a dummy in his mouth holding a baby, which is either crying or laughing, and I couldn't quite work out which.
A bit of both. We're both crying and laughing.
A bit like being a parent. And my son said, are you going to put a dummy in your mouth? Which I thought was lovely and literal, and so I'm meeting you, and therefore we all have to sit around with dummies in our mouths and look at each other like giant men babies.
That's a terrifying image. Thank you for that.
That's all right.
There's a BBC... I was a bit worried about it being called Dummy because there's a BBC 3 or ITV3 series about man babies, grown-up babies who like to...
And
it's kind of a weird sexual thing. Like,
yeah, because they
the
get...
The book's not about that.
Right. That's
not
good
all.
To know.
No.
Yeah,
you probably wouldn't be on this podcast if it was.
That's also true.
That's the podcast next door.
I wonder why they were dressed like that. Yeah. In the wrong room.
Well, being audio, you can't actually see what we're wearing, of course. So I'll just pull out my nappy and carry on.
Oh, God.
So shall we start with some news stories, I think? Keith, should we start with a slightly more serious news story and then go on to the absolute nonsense?
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, this is reasonably ridiculous, but anyway. So this is a story that was picked up on the BBC and another couple of sites. The headline is Touchscreen Toddlers Sleep Less, Researchers Say. And this is research at University of London, Birkbeck. And they've discovered through speaking to parents... It looks like for every hour a toddler spends on a touchscreen instrument, like a tablet or an iPhone, they get 15 minutes less sleep per evening.
That sounds very precise. That basically sounds like someone did that so they can make a really neat graph.
Yeah, it looks like it. I like it's got a picture of a very small toddler playing around with an iPhone. So I think they've shaped the story around the image that they can get hold of. So the doctor, Dr. Tim Smith, who one of the researchers has said, don't lose sleep over this, parents.
Ironic.
He does say, no, it doesn't matter if your child's getting like 10 to 12 hours of sleep a night, but you know, when you're a parent, every minute of sleep counts, doesn't it?
So sorry, was it an hour per 15 minutes?
So yeah, apparently every
so if your child loses, say, an hour's sleep out of 12, that's sort of all right. So that's 4 hours of sheer screen time you could give them before bed, right? That seems like a pretty good Faustian pack.
That's a very interesting reading of that data.
Yeah, you've worked it back already.
Thanks.
You can actually get away with,
you know, 8 hours.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
8 hours of screen time is a mere 2 hours less sleep. That's basically not having to do anything during the day.
I think, yeah, that's quite twisted, but never mind, that's fine.
I'm not sure that's what we intended with the reading.
So Matt, your son Charlie is 18 months.
18 months, yeah.
The star of the blog, star of the book. And
well,
have you yet introduced screens to him?
I've no choice, I don't think. As soon as he sees the phone out, he wants to look at the phone, he knows how to swipe, I know this is, I'm a terrible parent. but he swipes and he kind of he knows how to choose a video and press the screen to make it play. He's only bothered about videos that involve himself. He's quite vain.
Sure.
But he likes to watch himself kind of paddle or mess around in the park or whatever. Like, I mean, so we watch an awful lot of that. But the idea that means that he sleeps less. He doesn't really sleep now, so he can't sleep less. He's, in fact, if anything, he sleeps more. If I could sort of dangle an iPad above his car,
literally a mobile.
Yeah, dangle a mobile above your children's cars.
Yeah, some sort of YouTube thing. Mm.
I do remember Charlie Brooker writing a thing about his son when his son was born, and how he used his phone as a torch. You know, you use your phone as a torch. Mm. But then he realised he had a very terrifying face as his lock screen thing on his phone. So he was actually looming over his sleeping son with this monstrous face lighting up the room.
Yeah.
Which doesn't seem like the best idea.
That's very Black Mirror-esque.
It is very Black Mirror-esque. While we're on that sort of territory, shall I hit you with the second news story?
Okay.
So I have a story here from your alma mater, Keith. Just to remind everyone, Keith is the games editor of The Guardian.
I am, yes.
As well as the best-selling author of A Boy Made of Blocks. I'm not doing
You're doing it more than me this time.
I can't help it. And Dummy is out now.
I've read Boy Made of Blocks, and it is absolutely brilliant.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you're only going to mention it once, let's get it out
of
the way.
Okay.
Let's move on to my book.
No more mentions from now on. It's Dummy by Matt Coyne.
I bought it twice, actually.
Why? What happened?
Because I bought it as a book, but I'm also a parent, so I can only read in the dark. So I can't
Right, excellent. That's good.
So it's just using up space in your house now, is what you're saying?
Essentially, yeah.
Okay.
No, I think what he's saying is that everyone should buy two copies, one paperback and one on Kindle.
A daytime and a nighttime copy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Maybe we could market it as that. Anyway, could we go back to the news story?
Okay.
So the news story headline from The Guardian, from the marvellously named Charlie Brinkhurst Cuff, is the author of this article. It's only The Guardian, or maybe the Times. Anyway, is terrorist baby faces US embassy interview after error on visa form, which I just... Terrorist baby, I love that. So this is because the child's dad accidentally ticked a form on the visa waiver form for his 3-month-old, where the question said, do you seek to engage in or have you ever engaged in terrorist activities, espionage, sabotage or genocide? He ticked yes.
But only for his baby. I thought that was interesting.
Not for him. Nothing else.
He threw his baby under the bus.
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe he was reading sabotage as kind of filthy nappies or something like that. Mm. So the end result was the baby was taken away to... from their home to the embassy in Grosvenor Square, London, to be questioned by officials.
To be detonated.
In a round trip that took 10 hours. So basically, the baby was taken away to the British embassy and questioned.
And they had to sit 10 hours off.
It's like a babysitting. I'm going to fill out a visa waiver form next time I'm fed up with the kids.
It just makes me think, though, when you're filling out those forms, you do just go, yes, 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 don't you? And you never really think, what am I really ticking here?
I don't, because I'm so paranoid about going to the US that I really read those things. I think I spend most of my 10-hour flights to LA reading the visa waiver forms.
Reading the small text.
Yeah.
But presumably that guy did as well, but still filled it in for his baby to say you're a tourist. That's where the real crime is.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, haven't ticked no for himself.
Yeah, exactly. I presume he did, yeah.
There's a crime novel in this, I think.
Yeah.
Probably. Have you already got a passport for Charlie, Matt?
Yeah, a complete waste of time and money, basically. It is, is it 50 quid or something for a baby passport? We took him on, he was about 8 months old. And I think the last for 6 months, the idea that he's still going to look the same in 6 years' time, I could have just basically drawn his picture on a beer mat and sailed through as much as he looked at it.
Yeah.
He just looked like Greg Wallace, really. And continues to do, and still will do when he's 5 or whatever.
So maybe Greg Wallace has never changed his passport. He's getting away on a 50-foot passport. And of course, the other big news story today, the day we're recording, so this will come out about 6 days from now, is the general election has been announced for June.
Yes.
And Keith, I understand one of your sons has got into politics early.
Well, he had, yeah, because we're having local elections at the moment, and the Green Party came and they were handing out little posters that you could put in your bedroom windows. And my son quite liked the little poster. So my 9-year-old son, Albert, put the poster in his bedroom window. And we thought, that's fine. He's interested in politics. It's no problem at all. And then a few days later, I got a knock on the door, and it was our local Green Party candidate who said, I couldn't help but notice that you've got a poster in your windows. Could we possibly put a sign outside? And the thing is, my house is one of the first houses you get to when you come into Frome. So it's prime political positioning, really, for the Green Party. So I just thought, well, I've got to, really, because I think it's really good for children to know, engage enough in politics to be interested. It's amazing to know that he's had some sort of effect, I think.
So if he'd have been a UKIP supporter because he liked
that
purple,
would never have happened. I would have made that visa waiver form out for him, and I'd have ticked yes on every, all the worst possible things. No, that wouldn't have happened. I mean, obviously I don't support the Green Party. If they ever find out how many times I fly to the States every year, I think they'll come and take their sign down. I think you have got to experiment with your kids over, maybe not 18 month year old.
Watch question time.
Sit down.
Make as much sense to him as
purple
it will.
Bad. Green not so bad.
That's what we do. They're very much colour coded, so they know that blue are the baddies. Purple are the baddies, and yellow and red are kind of the goodies, although the ineffectual comedy goodies.
Other political opinions are available. Yeah.
No, they're not. So now we have a gigantic green poster outside of our house. But I love the way as well, because it's the Green Party. They don't put them up on planks of wood. You actually get like a branch of a tree with like different twigs coming off it, so it looks really nice and organic.
So they've killed a tree to put a sign up.
I think it must have fallen down naturally.
I think regardless, you have to kill a tree to put a sign up, isn't that thing? Kill a tree, get a sign.
It can die naturally in the wind.
Right, let's move away from politics. That's quite enough of that. So meanwhile, what's everyone been seeing at the cinema, watching on DVD? Matt, you've been introducing yourself to the world of Pixar, which we have talked about a fair bit on this podcast before, because every parent does.
This is because he's only 18 months old. I can't contribute to your... what have you been seeing?
Well, Keith, you can start this.
Well, I've seen Beauty and the Beast, but yesterday I took my son to see Fast and Furious 8.
Now, what rating is Fast and Furious 8?
Well, this is interesting, because when I went into the cinema with my sons, and almost everybody else were there were teenagers, and I went up to the counter and asked for the tickets, and the man said, are your children over 12? And I thought he was trying to charge me extra for their tickets. So I was like, no, that one's 11, that one's 9. And he said, you do realise it's a 12 certificate? And I said, no, it's 12A, which means with adult supervision, any child can come in. And so they did let me in because I'm an idiot. And
then, yes, they are 12, but I'm a terrible parent. Yeah. No, the tickets.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, there was lots of shooting. And there was one F-bomb as well, which I was not expecting.
An F-bomb?
That you allow one F-bomb in a 12A, and it was delivered by Dame Helen Mirren. So I think the rules are, you allow one, and it's got to be delivered by Dame, and then it's okay.
So Dame Edna Everage dropping an F-bomb in the Power Rangers film
that would
was to be
fine.
Expected.
And I would go and see the Power Rangers if that happened. But yeah, so it wasn't quite suitable. All they could talk about when they came out, they were so excited because they'd seen a film with the F-word in it. They found it just astonishing.
So as 12As go, compared to, say, The Dark Knight Rises, which I think was 12A, I think the new Power Rangers is a 12A. Where does it sit in the how hard, you know, can parents with sort of 8-year-olds go see it?
I'm probably a little bit more free and easy with it. It's compared to the Marvel films, it was much more adult orientated. There was lots of very highly choreographed violence and lots of shooting. There's no blood at all, but it's much more of a teenager experience. Teenagers, but there was a row of teenagers behind us and they were absolutely loving it. They were just laughing constantly all the way through. It's the most ridiculous film I've ever seen. It's just hilarious.
So maybe one for...
I would maybe for 12 upwards.
Yeah, okay.
Unless you're an irresponsible idiot like me.
So Keith has tested this so you other parents don't have to fool
exactly.
themselves.
Can we just go back to Dame Helen Mirren is in Fast and Furious?
I think she's a shoo-in for an Oscar.
Yet again.
Yeah. But yes, she is. She's a Cockney gangster mother.
Oh my God. Are you sure you went into the right screen?
I hope this isn't a spoiler. Honestly, if you're going to see this film, you shouldn't worry about spoiling the plot.
What sort of car is she driving it?
She's only in a couple of scenes.
That's a waste of a day.
I know. It would have been amazing if she was in a Lamborghini or something.
And also out now, at the other end of the scale, so I think we've topped out the age range there, is Peppa Pig : My First Cinema Experience. I do love a film with a colon.
Kind of slightly unnerved you keep saying the colon part, as though it's this horrendous medical movie. Based on parts of her anatomy.
Is it the punctuation point, or does it actually spell colon?
It is the punctuation point, yeah, so there you go.
It's just a colon. It's not Peppa Pig's colon. It's not, they're not chopping
Peppa
her up.
Pig colon.
God, stop saying colon.
My First Cinema Experience - at the Cinema. Which is pretty much a compilation of episodes of Peppa Pig.
Now I have exclusive new episodes.
So I have some feelings about Peppa Pig, and I understand, Matt, that your wife Lynn's, who pops up a lot in your writing, she also has some feelings.
Well, she hates Peppa Pig. I don't really care, to be honest about it.
Why does she hate Peppa Pig?
I don't know. She read something somewhere that said it was bad.
What do you mean?
You heard it here first.
Yeah, is Peppa Pig like alt-right or something?
This is how it's been explained to me. I was only half listening. I'm a terrible husband and a terrible. Actually, she's not my wife. Actually, I should make that clear. She's my girlfriend.
Right. Okay.
Apologies.
She's screaming at the podcast. Right.
Yes.
She thinks that Peppa's like Mardy and kind of prejudiced and not very
prejudiced.
Well, against her fat dad.
Well, this is where I have feelings about Peppa Pig. I think it's about bullying fat dads. So there is a very particular episode of Peppa Pig in which they make like a tree house or something like that, and everyone has to knock to get in the tree house, except Daddy Pig is too fat to get in the tree house. And the rest of the family is sitting inside going, "No, Daddy, you can't come in. You're too fat."
Wow. And laughing at body shaming.
Body shaming in Peppa Pig.
Daddy Pig.
Oh. But you quite like it, right, Keith?
Because I think it was the first thing that I was able to sit down and watch with my kids that I actually liked. Like, you know, when they're really, really young, you watch In the Night Garden and everything like that. And it's just mind-numbing and horrendous. Yeah. But then when he started watching Peppa Pig, I think Daddy Pig is like the preschool Homer Simpson, in that he's this kind of knockabout, slightly idiotic character, but lovable and funny. And he gets some really great lines in it, especially the one where they go and visit him at work. I love that episode.
You're citing specific episodes.
Yeah.
Actually, so did I.
Oh, it's a really good episode, because all the other animal parents have got really stupid jobs, like stamping things. But he's like doing very complex mathematical equations on a blackboard. And it's just brilliant. It's just so beautifully done.
I'd like to point out right now, non-parents are discussing what happened in Line of Duty, the finale of Broadchurch. We're discussing an episode of Peppa Pig.
Well, all episodes of Peppa Pig. But that, yeah. So, but I'd say, you know, the first two seasons are the best.
I don't realize it was a mathematician.
Like The Wire.
He's a mathematician, then, isn't he?
Well, I don't know what he does, but he was working out the load-bearing velocity of something. but anyway, yeah, so I think he's a good character. And I'd never picked up on that, but I think it's just because she's a forthright young feminist pig. And I think, fine, you know, she knows her own mind and she's not taking any prisoners.
And, of course, her dad's a fat bastard.
That's right.
Oh, no. So let's talk a little about your book, Matt, especially since we've mentioned Lynn's your girlfriend and mother of your child. How did she feel about you writing the blog when you started writing the blog?
It didn't start as a blog, really. I put a post on my personal Facebook page about after Charlie was just 3 months old. So, yeah, it kind of evolved from there, and because that first post went crazy viral, she kind of had to respond to that rather than to the, because the blog came sort of months later, really.
And do you think, I mean, I know you've talked about this before, so I'll try not to bore the hind legs off you with the same questions as you've talked about in other interviews, but do you think it was something about the fact that it was a dad talking rather than a mum that made it go viral, or just the sense of humour, or what was it, do you think? That
I honestly don't know, because if you know when you got, you know, when you have a Facebook page and stuff, you can look at the people who follow you and the people who respond, the people who like, and it's something like 90% mums and 10% dads. There's not many dads who follow Man versus Baby, so the response must have been from mums in the first place. But it's really difficult to tell with that initial post. And with Lindsay, I don't think she even read the initial post. She hasn't even read the book yet, actually. It's out on Thursday, and she's not even read it.
Really? Have you snuck some... Because that could be very... You could put all of your side of the relationship.
I'm getting divorced on Friday.
Right.
She's not read it. And the weird thing is that people are coming up to her and saying, oh, I like that bit. When, you know, the pre-release copies.
Right.
They're coming up to her and talking to her. I like that bit where you're in it with whatever. And, yeah, she's not ready yet.
But that's going to be interesting.
When she actually read the original post... Yes, I don't think she finds me as funny as other people do. She's kind of used to, you know, you sit next to each other on a settee for 20 years, you get kind of bored with my shtick.
Mm.
But, so she probably didn't read the original post until it had been out and had gone wild for a couple of weeks. But I went into the living room one day and she seemed to be reading it. So and she was laughing her ass off, and I thought, oh, that's good. I mean, it must be quite funny. But she was reading the comments.
Well, they slagging it
off. She was crying with laughter. I said, what's so funny now? And she said that her top comment was just why do you look like a chubby David Tennant? And that was her favourite thing about the entire thing.
She's going to have that on a t-shirt.
So she loves the comments more than...
It's proper Daddy Pig territory, that, isn't it?
Exactly, it's disgusting.
It is disgusting. I'm seeing a certain hypocrisy there, given how she feels about the Daddy Pig body shaming.
You're going to have to prepare yourself, though, for, like, as soon as the books come out and her friends start reading it. This happened with my best-selling Richard and Judy-endorsed novel, A Boy Made of Blocks, is that when the book came out, lots of my wife's friends were emailing her a messenger asking about the state of our relationship, because obviously the characters get split up at the beginning of the book, so you're going to get like lots of friends saying, is this true about what happened with the nappies? And
did you get friends like trying to work out who they were in the book?
Well, I was really worried that might happen. There's definitely no characters in there that are based on my friends, not specific people, like there were amalgamations, but I was worried there was like a couple of characters in it who were very similar to a couple of my friends, and I was really worried when they read it that they would think it was them. But I'm not sure, they have not told me if they think it is them. So.
Well, they don't speak to you anymore.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's really, they just disappeared.
And Matt, you said Dummy got a got a legal read. So was there anything in there that got taken out or that we
can't tell you now?
It was so worth a try.
I mentioned a couple of people that,
by name.
Specifically by name. Yeah. I've changed some names so that the people in question aren't. Anti-Pat features quite heavily, but I haven't really got an anti-Pat.
Right.
That's not probably that far away, though, is it? If it's an auntie who comes to sit on your sofa drinking tea, she can probably identify herself.
Yeah, anti-Pat will know
how
anti-Pat is, I think. Like, yeah. Right. So that's going to be trouble.
Right.
But it's more sort of if I'd said something about somebody who was famous or whatever.
And did you have any inkling when Charlie came along that this would sort of change your career, that you would, you know, did you look at this child and go, yes, you are the making of me, child?
Pure paycheck. Yeah. it's just weird. Those first 6 months are odd anyway, and it's just a black hole and it's a singularity and everything just gets swallowed up and you don't really understand. I can't honestly remember writing the first post at all. I can't.
So what did you do as a living?
Graphic designer for a print company. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Really, really, really bad at it though.
So right.
It's kind of good to move on to something else.
Yeah.
So hopefully people will
really
buy
hope
it
that print company aren't listening.
Yeah.
I spent all my time writing a book at work.
Yeah. So I was a graphic designer for a long time, although I did do an English degree, but never used it at all.
Right.
And in fact, my dissertation was on French feminism in Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Oh, that is very useful.
Which nobody wants to publish, strangely enough. So that was really, really, really poor. That's the last thing I wrote over like 1,000 words.
Did you find a way of sneaking it into Dummy?
Well, it's there in the end. You know, I mean, it's an additional teaser
for book two, which your publishers don't yet know about. And did you feel a kind of, given you're writing about parenting, so there might be people reading it who haven't yet had kids. As I said to you, I breaking news, but expecting a second child in June.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So I was reading it going, oh my God, not again. So did you feel a kind of sense of responsibility about what you were saying to these poor souls who are about to have babies?
No. Sad. Yeah. Not really, no. I basically had to write it like I write the blog, which is just immediate. Charlie does something, I write it down, it goes on the page. I couldn't do the non-fiction stuff because you have to actually think about it. You know what I mean? I just have to observe.
Fiction stuff, yeah.
Stuff. Cause you have to, but just observing stuff. You just observe it and write it down. And with it being immediate, I kind of have to not really give a shit what anybody thinks who's reading it, really.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And one of the things I got from the book, Parenting is Common Sense and or Just Flying by the Seat of Your Pants, is it, and were you trying to sort of create a kind of coherent way of looking at parenting when you're writing it, or was it more just kind of like,
good God,
it's absolute bloody chaos.
It is chaos. If you're thinking of buying the book to get some sort of advice or anything professional, then you're going to end up with social services. There's not really anything useful in there, I don't think.
Well, I think but that's like, you know, because obviously we've had the Scummy Mummies on, and their book is quite similar, and it's a series of like anecdotes and observations about parenthood. But I think that is, for me, would have been a heck of a lot more valuable reading your book than, like, when you first become a parent, you're looking for anything that you feel like can systemize your life so that it'll make some sort of sense. And like, we went through the Contented Baby book, and we went through all the Baby Whisperer and all that crap. And I think what I really needed was a book like yours, or a book like Scummy Mummies, to say, just forget it, everything's chaotic, just feed them fish fingers and until they're 18 and then kick them out.
Just that's pretty much it. Just weather the storm. That's the first year. Weather the storm and it'll be fine. If you don't, then yeah. But I think basically I've sort of realised now that parenting is basically getting from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. without anybody dying.
Yeah.
And that's kind of an achievement. I think that's why so many people, you know, when you look on Facebook or whatever, or social media, at like the same time every night, it's just ream after ream of photographs of people drinking. And it's like it's like an Oddbins website as you scroll down. But I think that's just because people are celebrating getting to 8 p.m. You deserve that trophy. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
That
it's
is.
It's,
yeah,
it comes to represent something, that beer or that wine.
Oh, that glass. Yeah, yeah,
parents' time, wine. Daddy time.
Yeah, we're not all drunks. I mean, mainly the drunks.
Yeah, and from your very first blog post where you were talking about changing nappies and comparing it to F1. This is the one way I got through it. I just gamified the whole process.
Oh, yeah,
so,
yeah.
Trying to beat my best times on nappy changing.
Yeah, I did exactly the same. I kept imagining I was on the Cube, and Philip Schofield sort of stood behind you, being really encouraging. But if you were, you know, if you sat to...
My childhood hero, Philip Schofield.
Right.
As previously discussed with your mumsy mum, I think.
Philip Schofield.
Yeah, lovely. You've met him.
I've met the person.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is he as nice as I imagine?
He's absolutely lovely. You just want to lick him. It's a really, really, really nice guy.
I see you know my feelings about it.
Okay.
Anyway,
We're going to move on from licking Philip's gum.
Yeah, well, I don't know. We don't have to.
We'll just go back there every now and again for a happy reason.
It's the studio next door again.
Why do you think it is that more dads are beginning to share their opinions on parenting? You know, both of you, Keith and Matt, have written about what it's like to be a dad in different ways. But it feels like something that's happening more. Why do you think that is?
I think there are changes in the way that fatherhood over the last 20 years, massive changes in the way that fatherhood is perceived. I mean, it's not perceived as something you know traditional roles have equaled out a lot now, and I think for men are maybe because I think the workplace has changed so much and there's so much flexibility in our lives, I think that men naturally take much more of a role, an emotional supportive role in their child's development now, I feel.
I mean, maybe also social media's changed it. I mean,
coming back to Matt, you get to share it.
I was thinking just also, you know, you're publicly a dad, you know, you can it's part of your life, it's not hidden.
Yeah,
you know, your home life is public now.
It's the flip side of social media as well, is that you're held to account about being a dad and being somebody who is involved and all that sort of stuff. So I think that's the other side of the same coin. Mm. You have to be involved now. You have to, otherwise you're an arsehole. Yeah. Be at least a bit involved. There's plenty of dads who still aren't, but I think you're right, that generational thing. My dad's involvement with parenting he was of that generation where you just pace up and down outside the delivery room with this unlit cigar just waiting for the call to say it was a boy, or the disappointing discovery that it was a girl. Turning,
was your dad Victoria? Are you over 100 years old?
I have to say, so we did our first NCT. We're doing NCT. You know, it's been nearly 7 years since I've had a baby around. So doing NCT. And we did our first session last week, and apologies if said person from NCT whose story I'm about to share.
Jeff.
It's not Jeff.
Auntie Pam.
It's not Auntie, it is Auntie Pam. Auntie Pam from NCT, another dad, Auntie Pam from NCT. We were talking about this generational thing of parenting and useless dads. And he said when his parents were in the delivery suite and so on, so when he was being born, his mum said to his dad, go and get yourself some food. His dad took it to mean go out and have a meal. So his dad left the hospital, drove to his favourite restaurant and had a 3-course meal.
Oh my God.
And during which time his son was born.
That's amazing.
And returned back to get absolutely destroyed.
Is that the Ivy?
Yeah.
Emergency vending machine, basically.
Yeah. I have got a story like that. Have I told you the story about me and the crisps?
Tell us.
Right, so it's not as bad as that, but it's reasonably bad. So when we went in with Zach, when Morag was expecting Zach, we got into the birthing room, and the midwife said to me, it's probably a good idea, because this is probably going to be quite a long time, so you should probably get something to eat if you've not eaten. So I didn't go to a restaurant, but I did go to the vending machine, and all they had was crisps. So I bought a packet, and I was really hungry, so I bought a packet of crisps, came back to the room, and Morag was already having contractions, and she was having quite regular contractions of about two minutes. So
smoking
I was
bacon.
Really hungry, and I had the crisps, and I was really conscious of the midwife saying, you've got to eat, you've got to eat.
To me.
So, but then I felt really self-conscious about eating these crisps while Morag's having contractions. So I was thinking, I know what I'll do. What I'll do is I'll eat the crisps every time she has a contraction, so she won't hear me. So every time Morag's had a contraction and groaning away, I'm like, and then after the third contraction, she just like turned around to me with them. Will you stop eating those crisps?
You don't want the contractions to be too far apart, there, do you?
I know.
You just get through a bag of frazzles.
Exactly. I just wanted the whole thing to speed up. So
come on, I'm starving.
I'm on one crisp every 5 minutes.
Was there nothing softer? That's a good piece of advice. Get some skips.
If you want something that melts on your tongue, exactly.
They're quite
should
smelly,
be a guide, though. Like 10 best things for dads to eat while their wife is having contractions.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Well, it's fairly similar to the Kermodian, Mark Kermode rules of conduct.
Yes,
for,
in the cinema.
So you want a set soft bread roll.
Being a dad at birth is very similar to being at the cinema. You've got to, you can't
stay out of the way.
Yeah, don't
shut the hell up.
No mobile phone reception.
And keep your eyes on the screen.
Yeah.
Stop eating the crisps. Yeah.
And things like NCT, do we think they're useful? I mean, you sort of say in the book that you found it pretty useful, right, Matt?
I think so, yeah. Well, the other stuff, the books, the TV stuff, the one born every minute stuff, not useful at all to me. So the NCT stuff was quite good. We had a our what do you call the woman who's in charge of that? It's not midwife, is it? It's kind of like a, you know, boss woman.
I don't know what they call them in NCT.
Ours is a doula, but I
doula.
But that's a birth partner, really, isn't it? But that's what she does.
Well, this was like an elderly hippie lady. It was fantastic. I mean, it kind of mystified the entire thing a bit more than...
I was going to say, I made a note here that you weren't much into the hippy-dippy style of parenting.
No, it was all the... how it's about connections and all that sort of stuff, when realistically you just wanted to be told that it was okay to stay up at the top end and that really...
So you were looking for an excuse to pace outside and have a cigar, really? She wasn't having any of that, was she?
You'd already booked your table at the restaurant.
It may be somewhere in this 12-hour span I will turn up.
Well, there was no skips in the vending machine. What else do you want me to do?
What was your experience? Was it a bad experience? Do you want to share it?
I think it was pretty standard, really. I went off expecting to have to race to the hospital because it was, you know, the baby was going to arrive in like half an hour. But obviously, 12 hours later, I'm still sat there wondering if it's okay to go and fetch some crisps. So you kind of sat there thinking, will this never end? Because obviously I'm in enormous amounts of pain and boredom here.
Yeah, I was about to. Sure, you were thinking, will this ever end?
But to be honest, that's all joking aside. That's the hardest thing about it is seeing someone you love and care about in a lot of pain and that's quite tough to deal with, especially when it's somebody who you're accustomed to seeing being quite strong and quite emotionally tough. Like, I mean, so I found that quite hard, and I was hungry.
those two things combined, it's a nightmare.
Make you weak.
Yeah. But I think I said in the book that basically it's like being really full of adrenaline and really bored at the same time. And I think I said it's like watching Downton Abbey on a plane that's about to crash into a mountain. And it's not an experience you feel all the time, having adrenaline and boredom at the same time. It's kind of a weird experience.
I guess the dentist, a long dental treatment is maybe a little...
Or being in the army, don't they say most of the army is like, 100 hours of boredom and 3 seconds of absolute terror?
So trench warfare.
Yeah.
Basically, or birth sex. Is trench... sex and birth, yeah.
It's basically sex and war with crisps.
That's pregnancy solved.
And afterwards, but, you know, maybe... Yeah. Minus the crisps.
Yeah, you never need to cover pregnancy again. Sex and war, that's crisps. Done.
And the other thing I noticed that you had general rage about, no, rage is maybe pushing it, but was people who are kind of fairly critical of sort of breastfeeding in public, who are very intolerant of kids in public, breastfeeding mothers, that sort of very normal thing.
I just don't understand it. What's the problem? I don't. Maybe I'm not gawping hard enough. But if a baby is breastfeeding, you only do see the back of the head.
Yeah.
You don't see, and even if I was to see a nipple, do you know what? I'm not going to keel over and in shock and horror. Like, I mean, and who are these people who do? Who are these people who are like absolutely broken by the possibility of seeing a breast in public? They're just weird.
UKIP voters.
Yeah.
I think probably.
Yeah. Oh, anyone in the alt-right.
I mean, do you think people have got less tolerant or more tolerant of children in public? Have you sort of, you know, as a fairly newish parent, have you felt kind of under scrutiny? Or
it's difficult to know what to compare it to, really, since it's the first time.
When you didn't have a child, I suppose.
I wonder more scrutiny now that I've got a child.
Yeah. But, so you sort of feel the gazes.
Oh, yeah, without question. Some people just don't like babies. I get it. They're a pain in the arse sometimes. Like, they make a lot of noise and they kind of smell sometimes. And I get that they're annoying when they're in public. But do you know what? There's a hell of a lot of things in public that I find really annoying. Mm. And that's just part and parcel of being a human being, isn't it? You either put up with it or you complain about it or whatever. But just be decent about it and be human about it.
Yeah, I think it's a generational thing as well, isn't it? I can remember, like I've probably said before on here, but when Morag had, I think it might have been Albie, our second son, we went to Wells for the day and parked up and went to see... Morag wanted to breastfeed and it was time for a feed, so we went into tourist information and asked them, and it was an older woman there, and we asked her, you know, what's a good cafe for breastfeeding, what's like breastfeeding friendly, and she said, to be honest, I think you should just go back to your car and do it there. And we were like it was one of those real jaw hitting the floor moments. We could not believe it.
Did you pick her up on it?
No, because we were so it's one of those moments where you just do not have the mental faculty to deal with what has just happened. So we just kind of staggered out.
I wonder if for years she's got away with saying outrageous things because no one ever pulls her up on it.
Maybe, or maybe that's all she ever says. Maybe it's anywhere for lunch or just go back to your car. Maybe Wells is just awful.
Yeah. Is there a cathedral here? Oh, just go back to your car.
Yeah, that's all she said. All the workers are going, oh my God, Margaret's at it again.
Sending them all back to her car.
She's not public facing. This is not right. So yeah, that was pretty. But I think I do think it's a generational thing. I don't think there's anyone if our generation that would give a damn now about.
I hope not. I don't know.
But it's weird, isn't it? Because my mum will have breastfed and stuff, and she says that at the time there wasn't a particular stigma attached to it. Like, remember, it's kind of like there's been some sort of dip in civilization where there's a point at which Nigel Farage turned around and said that it's a bad thing.
Yeah,
not just brown women, all women. He doesn't.
Wow.
Katie Price and Katie Hopkins came out and said that they...
They
tend to be arseholes, who say
it. Yeah, it is if you group them all together, you're like, oh yeah, that makes sense,
actually.
Yeah, I'm
waiting for Piers Morgan to say something, like, it's only a matter of time.
Oh, he's probably done it afterwards. We'll Google it afterwards. He probably hasn't, Piers, it's fine. I'm sorry, Piers. And do you think it's okay for men, because obviously your book's about parenting in general, as is A Boy Made of Blocks, you know, it's not necessarily entirely from a male point of view, but do you think as a man you feel empowered to talk about things like breastfeeding in public? Do you feel okay with that, or do you feel it's not quite your place? How do you...
You have to be a bit careful about it, don't you? Because it's not my experience. Your experience is as an observer, and your experience is actually in terms of breastfeeding. And I did a post called... It was called Breastfeeding and the Weirdos, and that was about feeling protective of someone who's breastfeeding, and it kind of being ludicrous that you have to be, isn't it? Insane. But
you have to be a sort of like breast meerkat, don't you, right? Look out for potential weirdos.
But I did, it says in that post, I did, it was the first experience about it. We'd gone out to have lunch on a Sunday, we had a carvery or whatever, and there was literally a couple who were just clearly disgusted, you know, the eye rollers and all that sort of stuff, and God, they were kind of appalled by it. But yeah, I was in quite protective mode at the time, so I was I had my dessert with my top off. I took my top off and I was sat there in the same way in this booth. I mean, I'd been drinking a little bit.
So really, you just look like an England fan. You take your top off in the pub or in the restaurant. In a restaurant,
it wasn't a posh restaurant. It was a carvery. It was Toby. But yeah, I sat there and I thought, you know what I mean? That's as much solidarity as I can give at that point. In fairness, that couple did leave as well.
And how did Linz feel about you doing that?
Kind of appalled and disgusted.
Did she leave with them?
She just leaving. She turned it around. She was kind of
leaving you sitting there on your own.
She was kind of bilious, I think. Like,
Who is this podgy David Tennant?
Yeah, exactly.
And you put the baby right off its meal.
So it worked really well. What about you, Keith? Do you feel sort of empowered as a man to talk about these quite female areas?
Yeah, I think the book that I wrote is very much from the father's perspective, and I was very aware of that and felt quite I kind of, in some ways, lots of people said, oh, it would have been interesting to write it from Jodie's perspective, who's the mum in the book, and I know that I wouldn't have felt that I could have done that, because there's so much that, you know, any that mum experiences that there's just no way I could really understand or convey it in a lot of ways. And I don't feel like I'm not the purveyor of, you know, my wife's experiences. So, yeah, I feel very comfortable talking about parenthood and the emotions of parenthood and feeling vulnerable and worried and scared and upset. I feel really comfortable doing that. But, yeah, conveying the female experience of parenthood, I'm not as tricky. Mm. All I can do is...
Yeah, I've tried to be as clear as possible in the book that my experience is my experience, and that the idea that it is in any way compares to what is essentially the lioness's share of being a parent, which is pregnancy, birth, spinning the bloody plates when you get out of hospital and all that sort of stuff. Mine is largely just not an observer to the really, really tough bits, and then moaning about the bits that are mine that are tough. Yeah. But they're always kind of pissy and not really that big a deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just, But that's part and parcel of it. You exaggerate them in your own head.
Yeah.
I mean, I spent plenty of times arguing with Linz about who is more tired, and it seems absolutely ridiculous now.
Yeah, you do.
I mean, what
don't
an
you?
Idiot.
Yeah.
she's got 9 months of pregnancy and then the labour and all that sort of stuff, and I'm literally kicking the hand grenade of this child now towards her and taking cover and saying, oh, I'm really tired today. Like, I mean,
but it's easy for you to say now, like a year and a half in, when you're in the eye of extreme tiredness.
Yeah.
You do all sorts of stupid.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't generate them in the same sort of lucid way. No. That's the great thing about social media, as it's turned out for me in a way, is that, like I said about that original post, I don't remember writing it at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, at all. I can't remember being sat there and bashing it, because I wrote the entire thing on my phone in a shopping centre. and I suppose going back to it a month or 2 months or 3 months later and then reading it, I think, oh yeah, it was like that. It was it was as painful and as tiring and as generally tough as that. Again, a lot tougher for Linz, how to tell it.
Do you think you're going to carry on writing about the experience of being a parent now? I mean, is this it now? You're going to keep writing about Charlie for the next sort of 5 years, or?
I don't know. I've got to be. There has to be a cut-off point. I think, you know, really, it's just a point at which it becomes his experience rather than me observing his experience, and that's quite tough. But it is a 2-book deal, so at the end of the day. Financially,
yeah, legally,
you have to produce one,
and I shall explain that to him at great length. So, yeah, I think there is a point, but I don't think I'm anywhere near it yet. And I'm very, very careful about making sure that it kind of has to be a universal thing that you're talking about. Otherwise, it's not. It doesn't resonate with anybody if I'm just talking about one baby or one. It has to be kind of something that's a shared experience. So, in that way, that's something that I think I can do for a bit longer. There's plenty of material, because, you know, kids like, they're just the constant.
Yeah, you've got all sorts machines. To come. You've got Fast and the Furious 8 to come, yeah.
Well, now I know.
You've got all 8 Fast and the Furious films. And if Charlie was going to write a book about you one day, is there anything you'd really want him to leave out?
Oh, my God. Oh, I don't even know where to start. Yeah, he's not allowed to do that.
Just leave out words.
Yeah. And pictures, for goodness
sake. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I don't. It'd be interesting to fast forward 20 years and to have him write something from the opposing point of view about what his dad would like. I think that'd be really nice and circular. But yeah, I don't think I'll be alive by then. So I don't really care. No.
Bit bleak. All right. So I think we've come to that point in the podcast where we subject you to the 1 minute quiz.
Oh, potential.
We really need a 1 minute quiz jingle. Can someone sing a 1 minute quiz jingle?
Keith? I can't sing.
You've got a countdown. Oh,
we'll have to. We'll compose one. Maybe I'll have to compose.
We'll make ourselves a 1 minute quiz jingle. So,
Will it be as good as the show jingle?
It
I'm
sure,
Spanish.
I'm looking at Louise, our producer. Louise is going to be derived from our incredible
maracas. We could make
maracas, castanets, that sort of thing. It'll be great.
Celebratory.
Can we claim those on expenses?
So, yeah, I'll look into it.
Okay. good.
So what are the scores so far?
Okay, so you're going to get 10 questions. You have to answer as quickly as possible. Keith is going to mark you. Obviously, that means you can get 100 points maximum. You're going to be marked out of 10 for each question. And if you don't do well, Keith, what happens to him?
His children are taken away.
Brilliant.
Excellent.
and you're going to have to explain why. So the top score to beat is the Unmumsy Mum with 82 points. The bottom score to beat, sorry, Stuart, is Stuart Heritage on 60 points.
Right. So I'm aiming for Stuart.
Yeah. So essentially that's a 2-1 versus a first, isn't it? We haven't had anyone really crash and burn yet.
Not yet, no.
Not yet. So you should be all right. Right. Are you ready, Matt?
I am ready.
This is your 1 minute quiz.
Okay.
Best thing about being a parent?
Justin's house.
And the worst?
Night garden.
What's your distraction technique for a baby in a restaurant?
Oh, my iPhone.
Will you friend your kids on Facebook?
No.
One thing that your parents did that you've sworn not to repeat and have?
Smoked. I used to smoke.
Ooh.
No, not anymore. I gave up in the year 2000. It was millennium. My minutes running out.
Not around the baby, though, right?
Oh, good God, no. And I'd drive too slowly. Swore I'd never do that.
What's the most annoying thing other parents do?
get it right.
Most disgusting parenting moment.
Lost my car keys in a soft play area a couple of days ago, and found all kinds of disgusting things looking for them, including a slice of ham on a slide.
And a slice of ham on a slide?
On a slide, yeah. That was pretty disgusting. It was kind of going green and disgusting.
It could have been worse, but it makes me never want to go soft play again. Worst name you've ever heard or considered for a child?
It was always going to be Charlie, because that's my granddad's name. But I've heard horse dick.
No, you haven't.
This is true. This was in the paper. It's in the book, actually, I think. Or maybe that got taken out. but no, it was in the paper. There was Your Highness. They were the top three. Your Highness, I think, was three. Robocop was two. And Horse Dick was number one.
That's incredible.
And someone called their kid Punch.
Punch.
Which I quite liked.
Like Punch and Judy?
Mm.
Yeah, but I think it was like a
Punch in the face.
UFC kind of thing.
I quite like Robocop for a girl. I might steal that.
Well, it's very traditional, but...
What jobs would you like your children to do and why? Or child to do and why?
Oh, something that pays in cartloads of money so I don't have to work anymore. Yeah, one of those vacuous celebrities. Reality TV.
I'm not liking the score on this. And finally, what advice would you give to anyone shortly to become a parent?
I want to say enjoy it, but actually what you need to do is practice. Just basically empty your bank account and avoid sleep until you think you might die.
Thank you very much.
Right.
Matt Coyne, that was your 1 minute quiz.
I'm thinking I beat your mum to mum here.
Whoa.
That's where I'm pitching.
I don't know, there was mobile phone, there's vacuous celebrity. Oh, I'm not sure, this could be bleak.
Let's have a look.
Keith, do you want to add up those scores?
Yeah, Sarah, if you're listening to this, it's a complete fix. That's what mum's
doing. You're on 70.
So you've beaten, so close. I've beaten Stuart.
You've beaten Stuart, you are second from bottom.
Or third top. Or second top.
Yeah. Well, you could say that. There's you could also say fourth top, because above you are the scummy mummies, Graham Simsy and Anne the unmumsy mum. Maybe we should call it a day there. Thank you very much, Matt. Loved having you in.
Thank you, Matt.
Dummy by Matt Coyne is published by Headline and is out now. And A Boy Made of Blocks is out now, published by Sphere. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you next time on Day of the Dad. Right.
Goodbye.
Cheers, guys.
This has been an Hachette audio podcast, this fortnight's corrections. The three-month-old baby summoned to the US Embassy after being mistaken for a terrorist was, in fact, due to the baby's grandfather, not his father, ticking the wrong box on the ESTA form needed for entry to the country. It is still possible, however, that his grandfather hoped to relinquish his term babysitting. We hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast. Goodbye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.